Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Fenway Rundown podcast presented by MassLive. I'm your host, Chris Cotillo, coming to you a day or so before opening day at Fenway Park. Long awaited, I've been saying all winter, this is the longest winter ever. And we are finally at the end of it. And I thought it'd be a good time for an overall kind of season preview episode. And who better to have than the president and CEO of the Red Sox, Sam Kennedy, joining the show today. Sam, I know we're getting to a long awaited day here. How excited are you guys over at Fenway for this?
Well, we're really excited, Chris. Thanks for having me. It's hard to believe that we're going to be ready. If you walk around the concourses right now, you'd say, are they really going to be ready for opening day?
Yeah.
But I think we'll get there.
That's where we'll start. Obviously, Fenway is going to look a lot different than it did in normal times, first of all. And then also last year, 12% capacity coming back in, 4,500 fans. I'm sure that you'll be at the absolute maximum you possibly can be on Thursday and in this opening homestand, even if it's going to be, you know, 30 degrees or whatever. Just what does that mean to you after all the planning, after everything that's gone into it, to have some fans back in the ballpark?
Yeah, it'll be emotional for a lot of people. You know, last year was so tough. Obviously, everyone dealing with this hopefully once in a generation pandemic, and to play games at Fenway Park with no fans was one of the strangest, eeriest experiences I've ever been a part of. And so even though we won't have a packed house, it will be great to have people back. We got a little taste of it down at JetBlue Park in Florida. So it'll be great to have fans come back. They're such a part of Fenway and give us a competitive advantage here. So really looking forward to it. We'll start with 12% capacity and then hope to start to ramp up as we hope things continue to improve and get better.
I think I read in The Athletic that the Red Sox are, they have the smallest capacity in baseball. Were you disappointed that you weren't able to get more in for opening day?
Well, you always want more fans, you know, right. More fans has been a good recipe for us these past 20 years. But we've been really appreciative of the dialogue with Lieutenant Governor Polito and Governor Baker and Mayor Janey and Mayor Walsh before her. So, Look, we know we need to start somewhere. And there seems to be a willingness at the state level and the city level to consider moving the capacity up, assuming vaccinations continue to be widely available. And the numbers stay under control. So I don't have a timetable, but my hope is with vaccinations being available, I think to the general population starting on the 19th of April, hopefully things will start to move more quickly. So look, we do feel like we are at a bit of a competitive disadvantage. You know, the fewer fans you can have just by definition,
yeah,
less revenue, less support, less ambiance. But that said, we know our fans will be passionate and loud, and hopefully we'll start to get more capacity soon.
Do you have like a rough plan, or is it just all based on the case levels? I know that everything comes with a contingency nowadays, but do you have kind of an idea in mind when, you know, you'll get to 25% or when you get to 50 and eventually, you know, obviously back to a full ballpark?
Great question. Yeah, subject to the state and city's approval, we would hope to bump up from the 12%, maybe, you know, some point in May if possible, and then, you know, go to a larger percentage sometime after that, maybe June. You know, it's sort of like picking round numbers going month to month. We're sort of backing into a period where we hope to be able to have full capacity when a time is here where vaccinations are available. When vaccines are available for everybody and, you know, it's easy to get vaccinated and the general public has them widely and readily available, it seems like that would be an appropriate time.
Right.
So working back from that, we would look to increase capacity up from 12%, maybe to 25 and then 50 and then 100, but would also, you know, look, we are not, we've never done this before, obviously.
Yeah.
We need to follow the lead of the governor and lieutenant governor and the mayor and the health officials. So we'll just provide them as much information as possible. And look, you learn from other clubs and other markets. As you pointed out, it's kind of all over the map. We range from 12% to 100% in Texas.
Right, so. which sounds crazy at this point.
it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out in other markets, and we'll all learn from each other, and we'll get to Fenway being packed again, hopefully someday sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and the vaccinations thing, two parts on that I wanted to ask you. Number one, you know, I think you had a quote that, you know, in the 100 and something year history of Fenway, this is the most important purpose it served, being a mass vaccination site. Number two, you know, I see a lot of organizations, I think the Astros and the Cardinals just are doing vaccination efforts for their teams this week. Do you have anything like that planned for the Red Sox?
Great. Well, the first part of your question, I'll take first. We really believe that, you know, the ability to play a small part in the recovery with vaccination, with Fenway as a mass vaccination center, is one of the most important things we've ever done, if not the most, because I think it's rare you can point to something and say, wow, that saved a life or two or three. And I think by definition, you can say that. So really appreciate Sarah McKenna and her team who led that effort. And then as it relates to the second part of your question, we are working hard to try and identify the best possible way to get our players vaccinated when they come back, when they're eligible. Obviously, different players, different health concerns, conditions, and you know, we'll all be back together here in Massachusetts. So my hope is that we can get them vaccinated as soon as humanly possible. Obviously, that'll be done in coordination with the state and our medical team, which has been guiding us all the way along. So hopefully, well, it will be in April is our hope,
yeah.
And as soon as possible. We also need to think about needles going into arms and any side effects that people may have. So we need to think through that from a baseball ops perspective. So
I didn't even think of that. But
Heim and team need to, you know, figure that out. Do you stagger? Do you, you know, look, at the end of the day, I think you get the vaccine when you can get the vaccine. That would be my preference. And just get it over with, get it behind us. But hopefully we'll figure that out here as the team comes north very shortly.
And Alex said today that, you know, when it's available to him, he's going to get it. But it's an individual decision for players. I'm assuming you guys can't mandate that the guys get it, right?
Yeah, no, we cannot mandate, and nor would we try. But we strongly encourage but again, it's personal choice. But our hope is that every single human being that can get vaccinated will. We're told by the scientists and the experts that they're safe and most importantly, effective. And so hopefully everyone who can possibly get vaccinated will do that.
So moving on, I mean, I know you've been talking about pandemic related stuff for almost a full year, more than baseball stuff. So we'll get into actually some of the fun stuff here, but it's prediction season. You know, we just had our predictions for the year the other day on the site, and everybody's coming up with win totals. I'm not going to ask you to do that because that's a dangerous game. But generally, what are your realistic expectations for this Red Sox team?
Well, I think we can compete for a postseason spot. We need health, like everybody. It's such a cliche, but boy, you watch what happened this week with Matt Barnes and Eddie Rodriguez last year, and Chris Sale trying to come back. So we need good health. But I think this club is a team that is versatile, much improved over last year, a lot deeper. And so, you know, I shudder to say this, but the only place we have to go is up compared to last year. It was so brutal. But I do think we can compete. The team is so excited to have Alex Cora back. You've seen some of our new faces, some of our older faces performing well in spring training. So I do think we're well positioned, obviously in a really, really tough division. Everyone has improved dramatically, so it's going to be that much harder. But I do think we can compete, and we need to stay in this race down to the end and try and sneak into October. We're certainly not the favorite in the division. We understand that. But it's kind of nice to be in that position once in a while where you have a chance to surprise some people.
Yeah, that's been, I think, the big phrase from everybody. We're going to surprise some people, or that's not what we're used to from the Red Sox, you know, over the last few years. Talking to people in the organization, it feels like the way spring training went, I know it's been a bumpy last few days with, you know, Eddie's injury, Barnes, and the whole COVID situation that resolved itself, I think, a lot quicker than everybody thought it would. But how has spring training, if at all, changed your perception of this team, your expectations?
Yeah, it's a great question, because there were some real pleasant surprises. I just think it renewed our optimism and faith and commitment with our baseball operations staff generally, from Chaim Bloom to Alex Cora to new arrivals like Will Venable and Eddie Romero and Raquel and BOH. It's a great group. They've obviously brought in a lot of talent, a lot of energy, a lot of versatility. Some of the younger guys coming along, some of the guys returning to form. I think it really has given a lot of hope and optimism to us to see the way we played. And look, let's be honest, you know, a lot of these guys have a chip on their shoulder, a lot of turnover, but guys who were here last year, that was miserable. And you know, no one wants to go through that. I remember I'm not comparing the 2013. I know a lot of people have said that.
Oh yeah, everybody.
but I do remember vividly the way we played. It's kind of a silly anecdote, but we were at Yankee Stadium to open the season in 2013. I just remember playing a very competitive baseball game. And I can't remember who it was. Someone legged out an infield single. I think Johnny Gomes scored. I can't remember the exact circumstance, but I just remember it was a play that seemingly never would have happened in 2012 because everything went wrong. And so to hopefully we get off to a start where we're competitive and we're in games and we're not down 4 or 5 runs in the second, third inning like last year. And hopefully we'll get off to a much, much better start and capture the imagination of New England the way we know we can when we have a competitive team that is worthy of the fan support. And that's our job. And we failed last year.
I wanted to ask you about a specific comment you made to the Globe in January. I'm sure you know what it is, but saying, I think it would be inaccurate to say we're going for it with an all-in approach that, you know, perhaps we did prior to 2018. I think that gets some backlash just from fans saying, you know, you should go in all in every year. So I'll give you the chance to kind of expand on, and I know you did with Dan Shaughnessy, and you've talked about this in the past, but just wanted to ask now, like, what exactly does that mean? And when is that all in approach going to come back?
Yeah, well, what I was trying to say was that there's an approach every off season to build a team that hopefully qualifies for October baseball, then can put yourself in a position to win a World Series championship. And when I was speaking to Dan, you know, he was asking specifically about the approach as it relates to free agents and big free agent signings and splashes. And so what I said was, we're taking a little bit of a different approach this year. We've made some big signings, you know, whether it was Xander Bogaerts or JD Martinez or Chris Sale and Nady Evaldi for that matter. And so we had a lot of resources tied up, and we're giving ourselves some flexibility, bringing in some guys on shorter term deals. So it's a different approach. And the all in terminology, I think, was used to describe in Dan's mind, you know, not having a big free agent splash, if you will. And so I understand that as a lifelong Red Sox fan myself. Some winters, you know, you have that quote unquote, we're going all in on a David Price, for example. And other years, you know, you don't have that. You may make different moves like Mike Napoli, Shane Victorino, Johnny Gomes type signings that lead to the same place where we got in 2018. We did do a lot of big free agent deals over the last sort of 3 or 4 years. Thankfully, they worked out really, really well, delivered our 4th World Series championship. But this year, we took a little bit of a different approach. We'll see where it gets us. We also still have an entire season leading up to the trade deadline where you can make moves. So, you know, that was really what I was describing, was just pushing back on this notion that, you know, the all-in description, I think in some people's minds refers just to big free agent signings, long-term commitment.
That makes sense.
And we didn't, you know, we obviously didn't do that for obvious reasons. We've done it in the past, and I think we'll do it again in the future. It's just this particular offseason, we took a different approach given where we are.
You just mentioned something in your previous answer there that was interesting to me. You know, I think it was like recapturing New England. So this is something that, you know, I know I've asked in the group Zooms, and other people have asked about the relevancy question. You know, you turn on 98.5 or EEI, and it's a lot of Patriots talk, like it always is, but a lot of Celtics and Bruins talk. And it seems like there's not a ton of buzz around the Red Sox, at least in the last year and a half, or for whatever reason. I know you've said in the past that winning cures all. You know, you go out and you win, and you're back to what we're all used to. But is it that simple, do you think? Or is it, you know, something where the organization needs to take a more active role in trying to win back fans in a way?
Well, I do really believe that if we do our job right and we put a team out there that is fighting for a postseason spot, and we get into October, the rest really takes care of itself. You know, I've seen it, having been here 20 years, having grown up here, having lived here for, God, I hate to say it, nearly 50 years. It's easy to sort of, try and look around corners or try and find a magic cure. And when you talk about relevancy or buzz, the reality is if we have a competitive team, and we're doing the right things, and we're playing postseason baseball at Fenway, which is our goal each and every year, there's going to be plenty of buzz, plenty of relevancy. But understandably, there hasn't been, because we had such a difficult 2020. Obviously, 2019 wasn't much better. We made some incredibly unpopular decisions on the baseball operations side. Which we have to own and acknowledge that they weren't going to be popular within the fan base. And we respect that and understand that, because we all work in baseball because we started as fans. So we recognize that. And I do think we now need to sort of stop talking about it, and let's go out and play and see what we can show this year in 2021.
I've been trying to avoid writing the words Mookie Betts for the last few months, because it's obviously, you know, I don't cover the Dodgers, so try to avoid as much as possible. But I'm sure that's what, you know, you're referring to as an unpopular decision. I know that this is something that you said you envisioned, you know, everybody envisioned when you guys made the deal. But even, you know, a year later, more than a year later, are you surprised that people are still talking about it, still upset about it?
Definitely not surprised, given the caliber of player that Mookie Betts is, the type of person he is, what he's achieved in a Red Sox uniform, now in a Dodgers uniform. Not surprised, but still stand by the decision. We have to live with that. And hopefully we're building right now to that next great Red Sox team. And some of the players that came back in that deal will help us get there.
And one more on him. I think there's this notion that, he was, as soon as he got to LA, right, even before he played his first game there, he signed that 12-year, $365 million deal with them. I know it's hindsight, I know it's a tough question, but do you think he would have accepted that deal, those terms, from the Red Sox?
You know, it's hard to know, just because you can't. It's hard to answer any hypothetical question. I have nothing but incredible respect for Mookie and what he did, and he'll be cemented in Red Sox history for the 2018 season, but also more importantly, what kind of person he is. So, always rooting for him and wish him well. Hopefully, we won't be wishing him well later this season in October, but no, nothing but great feelings for Mookie Betts.
We'll move on from one LA sports superstar to another one for a second. I know you know where this is going, and it's not official yet, right? But LeBron James coming on as a part owner. I know you addressed it a little bit on the radio a couple weeks ago, but I know he's not going to be the one that's, making pitching changes or deciding on trades, but as much as you can talk about it, what do you expect, how active of a role do you expect him and Maverick Carter to have in the organization?
Well, we, like you said, nothing's official yet. And we know there was a pretty detailed report, media report in the Boston Globe. So we did not comment on that story and did not participate in that story. But understand that is out there. What I can say is that we have been working on a potential strategic partnership with a potential investment group. And we do have a partnership with LeBron and Maverick and Fenway Sports Management. I've become business partners with them and built a friendship and relationship over the last decade or so. So if something were to come together, I would see them being very active and involved at the Fenway Sports Group level and helping us achieve our ambitions as a sports, entertainment, media, a real estate business that has global aspirations. You know, we've got the Red Sox, we've got Liverpool, real estate, New England Sports Network, Roush Fenway Racing. So I think you could see us potentially expanding into other sports. And Maverick and LeBron are incredible business people, have built great businesses. And obviously LeBron's still playing, and I think he has a long playing career in front of him. But if it did come together, I think it'd be a great thing for Fenway Sports Group.
So, you know, we're envisioning him being around Fenway all summer, right? That's going to be his main priority now.
Yeah. Hey, listen, if that's the way this thing ends up going, I'm sure he's one of these guys that probably has every single day mapped out and planned out, but hopefully it comes together.
Something else you were asked on EEI a couple weeks ago, and you seemed almost surprised by the answer and surprised by the question and very clear in your response, was about the notion of Don Henry and Tom Warner potentially selling the team in the near future. Do you have any idea why that talk is kind of starting to pop up a little bit?
I think it actually pops up frequently in different markets with different sports ownership groups and teams. It is unusual that a partnership, you know, has lasted so long, 20 years now. And we've had, knock on wood, some really exciting things happen, great success. So I was surprised at the time when I got asked, because it's just the furthest thing from my mind. We're so into everything we're doing. And I can tell you, especially given the deal that we were just alluding to, if anything, I think you'll see a renewal and commitment to Fenway Sports Group as a business and tripling down. If you were, we're entering our third decade together. We're calling it FSG 3.0, trying to reinvent ourselves, reimagine the business, think about ways we can grow, take on new opportunities. So I can say with 100% certainty and clarity, I said it on the radio there, I'll say it again, John Henry, Tom Warner are not selling Fenway Sports Group nor the team. And we are looking at some strategic partnerships and investment from third parties, but not looking at a control sale, if you will. And so, so that's a good thing for Red Sox fans, given their stewardship here.
Related note, I think that, you know, I might be accused of being a homer for asking this question, but
that's all right. I'm a homer too.
Yeah, well, you're the team president. I'm supposed to be an objective reporter, so that makes sense. But do you feel like this ownership group and the accomplishments of it are underappreciated sometimes?
No, I don't. I get to spend a lot of time with our fans and all over New England. And I think there is actually a huge appreciation for what John Henry and Tom Werner and my mentor and former boss, Larry Lucchino, and the group that came together in late 2001 to take over this franchise. Great appreciation for what they've done. Now, that doesn't mean we don't deserve criticism, complaints when things don't go well. I just think it's a reflection of the passion and energy and enthusiasm for sports in this market. When you have a bad year, things can get bad and ugly pretty quickly. And when you have success, it gets magnified at incredible levels. So I think there's a great appreciation, especially from Red Sox fans that have been around a long time, you know, my generation, but really even the generation before us, my parents' generation, you know, growing up here in Boston and New England, you know, we waited a long, long time for that championship in 2004, and to follow it up with three more has been special. And to have an ownership group that's hungry for more is pretty special. So it's been a great 20-year run, and looking forward to the next 20.
I don't want to keep you much longer, but I do want to fire away with some rapid fire things here at the end. Theo Epstein, have you heard of him?
Who?
Familiar with him at all? So he's obviously in his new role with Major League Baseball, and he had a lot of comments here in the last couple of days about kind of his ideas for the game. I'm sure that you talk to him frequently about this type of stuff, but in your mind, what could make the product better? Like, if you could identify whether you want to get into specifics of you want to ban the shift or whatever it may be, what do you think the game needs to fix?
Yeah, I think generally we need to focus on the product, which Commissioner Manfred and Theo and Dan Halem and Chris Marinac and the group are all doing. We need to get, hopefully we can get the game back to a 2 hour, 45 minute, 240, 245
230.
Product. Yeah, 230 wouldn't be so bad either. And it's not that people want less baseball. It's just they want less dead time in the baseball games, right? In between innings, in between pitches. People do want more offense. I think people are interested in a lot of the rule changes that we're talking about. So we need to continue to push ourselves as an industry forward. And I think it's exactly what Commissioner Manfred's doing. And bringing in Theo Epstein to help advise him was a really, really, I'm biased, of course, given my history, but I think it was a really great decision. And hopefully Theo and Commissioner Manfred and the team will start to make some change, but it has to be done collaboratively with the players, which is another great reason you bring in someone like Theo, who's got tremendous relationships on the player front and the agent front. So I was really excited to see him go there. And I know it won't last. I don't think it'll last long, because I imagine him being back with a club at some point soon. He is not meant to. I know when he was in Chicago, when he normally was going to spring training, that was an odd feeling for him. Yeah. So I would expect to see him at some point getting back into the fray and into the arena.
Another one just on the future of Fenway. I think it's kind of fallen by the wayside. Any potential improvements, upgrades, normal things, because you've had to, you know, redesign it in ways we've never seen about 10 times in the last 365 days. So what do you envision? You know, obviously you guys have made so many improvements to the ballpark since taking over, and you know, it's completely different than it was even 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. What's next? And you know, I think the question, there's a couple articles that popped up over the winter of, is it time to move on from Fenway? How would you answer that question?
No chance, no way, no how, never. You know, Fenway is so special, situated in the heart of the city. It's such an important part of who we are as Bostonians and New Englanders. What I envision next is development around the park that we're engaged in. We're building a 5,000 person live music venue right out behind the bleachers right now. It's going to be absolutely incredible, the MGM Music Hall at Fenway. And so I envision more development, more activity, more life, more energy. And in a, if we can all imagine a post-pandemic world, I think the Fenway neighborhood is the place you're going to want to be to live here, to work here, to play here, to enjoy yourself. So looking forward to the sort of next generation of the Fenway neighborhood, which is literally being built around us right now at this very moment.
And what about, you mentioned the music hall, and I'm not sure if the timeline, I'm sure it has a little bit shifted on that just because of the pandemic. But in terms of other events this year, do you expect concerts over the summer? Do you expect, you know, football games, soccer games, whatever, the normal things you have once baseball season's over?
Yeah, I hope that we'll be in a position to stage some concerts. We had many, many, many booked. But as each sort of passing week on the calendar goes by, without having clarity on capacity restrictions or allowable number of fans, it's hard to make commitments to the acts and the bands that are coming through. So we still have some on the books. And if we can get to an environment where it's safe and the health officials and the state officials say, okay, we could still stage some concerts potentially this summer. And so hopefully more to come on that in the coming weeks.
And lastly, I wanted to ask you, and this is a question that I've asked you definitely in the past, but do you have any update on Fenway Park getting an all-star game in the next few years? I know it's been a long time now. You're probably up on the rotation, but any progress on that whatsoever?
Yeah, we've had some dialogue with Major League Baseball. Nothing new to report now, but we would.
You can announce it on here. That'd be great.
Yeah, exactly. We would love to host an all-star game as soon as possible. And like you said, we are hopefully coming up where it may be our turn someday soon, but no news on that yet.
Well, that's Sam Kennedy ready for a much longer season and hopefully for the Red Sox, a much better season than last year. Sam, I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Chris, great to be with you. Good luck this season to all of us.